Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Scottish Clans podcast. I'm Clint. Thank you for joining me for part two of my discussion with Dr. Anus McConaugh of the University of Glasgow. I very much enjoyed this discussion I had with him. It was like a feast to me. He is so knowledgeable on things I'm so interested in. And I hope that you have liked this too if you listened to part one. If you haven't, I would go back and listen to that one first before you go ahead in this one, but it's not absolutely mandatory. It's a free country. You can do whatever you want, but you do get the foundations of these respective clans of the Mackenzies and the MacLeods. In this episode, we're going to go deeper into the story of how the histories of these two big clans intertwined, how they connected with each other, and eventually the conflict between the two clans and the defeat and pretty much the extinction of one as an entity, as a clan, and the conquering of their lands and pulling them into their possessions by the other clan. Now, before we get started with that, just a couple of things. One, I do have a YouTube channel. Go over there if you want some of this content, this type of content that I've been putting out over the last few years with visual aids. Go ahead and head over there to the Scottish Clans YouTube channel. Some of the episodes are just podcast material added with visual aids added, and you can go over and get that there on the YouTube channel. And others are videos that are made specifically with YouTube in mind. They never were part of the podcast. They start off with visual aids, and the whole thing is just me sharing with you some information that I think is helpful and interesting, as well as the visual aids that'll help you. So for those of you who have been frustrated because you do not have a map of Scotland memorized in your head, then maybe go over and check out the YouTube channel. Before I turn you over to that discussion that I had with Anus, I want to tell you that this episode is brought to you by USA Kilts. I'm excited. The hiking season's coming, and I can't wait to get out and hike around in my casual kilt from USA Kilts. It is in the Macduff Hunting Tartan. And I have other things that I wear with kilts. I've also had a few occasions recently, more formal occasions, where I wore my 5-yard wool kilt, also from USA Kilts, as well as a few other pieces that I got from them that go with the kilt to complete the whole attire. And I, guess what? To figure out how it's all supposed to go together, to stay away from taboos, make sure I do it right, I went over to their YouTube channel, USA Kilts and Celtic Traditions. And so I recommend that to you as well. Go find them on YouTube for a ton of stuff, not just on how to wear kilts correctly, but also on some Scottish heritage, culture, history. I think you're really going to like it. And without further ado, I will turn you over to part two of my interview with Dr. Anus McConaugh.
In discussing the Mackenzies, we discussed a little bit about the relationship between Sheald Torkel and Sheald Tormage. The Mackenzies, there's a few groups that when you read the connections with them, and I apologize if I'm pushing this once again a little bit back before your specialty, but you have the Mathesons, you have the McCrays. I recently did a podcast episode on the McCray relationship to the Mackenzies, and in researching that one, some scholarly work says the McCrays may have been early on genealogically connected to the Mackenzies, which got this relationship off to such a strong start. And they just, you know, like we've cast our lot with this group, and we're going to ride it out, ride or die. And it worked fairly well for them, maybe until later years. But can you speak at all as to is that legitimate? These, like the Mathesons, the McCrays, some of these other that had a very close connection to him, claim kinship with them. I don't know to what degree anyway, could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there are all these families. So the Mackenzies come out top of the pile, right? They hold all the keys to the castle, right? But they're not the only family there. And there may be even Johnny come lately. So I suggest that the Mackenzies come in during the Lordship of the Isles period. I don't know if that's true or not. I think is as good as anything else. Other interpretations are available. In terms of the Mathesons, well, the earliest Gaelic genealogical manuscript, which seems to have been produced within the Lordship of the Isles, which mentions Mackenzie, is a 1467 manuscript. It's been commented a lot by Ronald Black and by a colleague of mine here in Glasgow, Dr. Martin McGregor too. So it's called 1467 manuscript because the latest date on it seems to be 1467. So it seems to have been compiled between 1400 and 1467, and it's a list of genealogies of all the clans. Now, this includes, I can't remember if it includes Macrae's, I'm not sure it does, but it certainly includes Matheson's and Mackenzie's and MacGillandrish, another Ross outfit. Are these Mackenzie's on this manuscript the same as our later Mackenzie's? I don't know. It could be. It's possible. I'm not as certain about it as some people are, I think. And the Mathesons, possibly, these might be the Mathesons. Now, the Mathesons, by the time that I have some sort of sight on them, seem to be in Lough Carron area in Wester Ross in the late 16th century. And these are MacDonald lands. And they become subsumed into the burgeoning Mackenzie Empire once the Mackenzies beat the MacDonalds. Now, to the, so they and at least as they're visible in the historical record, they are one of these important local families who are living in a Mackenzie lordship. The same is true with the Macraes. Now, the Macraes, on the other hand, have are on record in the late 16th, early 17th century as well, actually, some of the Mathesons are too, as keepers of Ellandonald Castle for the Mackenzies. So these people have a symbiotic relationship with the Mackenzies. Further back into the mists of time, what the actual relationship was, I don't know. But as time goes by, they are essentially part of the wider sort of Mackenzie empire is not quite the right word, but maybe it is. But it's this sort of overarching Mackenzie polity as it develops during the 16th century. And these people are, the Macleays in Strathcornan are another one. You see a reference to the Macleays fostering one of the younger sons of Mackenzie as well. So these are, these families become quite tightly bound into the Mackenzie polity. One of the Macraes is a successful farmer quite close to Ellandonald Castle in the later 17th century. Donochadh Macra, or Duncan Macrae, is wrote a couple of scrappy notebooks full of Gaelic poetry. Our only Gaelic, substantial Gaelic poetry compendium from the 17th century, actually. And it's written on Mackenzie lands containing a lot of Mackenzie poetry. But he's a Macrae, but his mother's kin are Mackenzies. So these people are all interconnected. And the longer they are together in the same lordship, the more interconnected they become. It's a chief's job, actually, to manage these personal relationships, even to the extent of managing fostering, who's raising whose bairns, because that determines how these people interact. There are really marriages, particularly at elite level, are tightly controlled. So all of these levers are at the chief's disposal, too. So whatever the distant origins of the Macraes or the Mathesons, even if they had been once a dominant family that loses the preeminence but remains in place while a new family comes in, who knows? But that's a really long-winded way, Clint, of saying I don't know.
No, that I was just as you were walking through that there was some really, really interesting information in that, and I'm glad you didn't just look at me when I asked about that and said, nah, I don't know. I'm glad you walked through that. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I don't want to spend too much time in those early, you know, we could go back into Ferchar Mac and Taggart, into Gilioan of the Ard. I keep on seeing it. It seems like Ferchar is more well attested and understood. Maybe Gilioan of the Ard seems a little bit more shadowy, but he keeps on popping up in places. And I don't want to. Did I say his name right? Gilioan?
Yeah, Gilioan the Ard. Yeah. Yeah, one of these, both shadowy characters, actually. Yeah, because I don't think we know an awful lot about either of them, to be honest. They're on record for that a few times.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it, yeah.
And it's too bad because, like, when Ferchar comes on the scene, he already is at the head of a substantial kindred.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have this gigantic backstory that we know nothing about. But like I said, I don't want to spend too much time there on those earlier time periods. I'd like to maybe allow you to talk a little bit about so eventually the Mackenzies do, following this trend you've mentioned about pulling in more and more territory and extending their influence, they get a hold of Lewis.
They do, yes.
And I thought you, in your discussion with Bruce Fumi, which he shared that with me, and I thought it was fascinating. I loved listening to that. And
well, Bruce is great. Yeah.
What an awesome guy.
Yeah.
He has a knack for storytelling.
Yeah, he does.
And a passion for Scottish history.
Yeah, it's great.
You said something in there I thought was really interesting, and we're gonna, in asking this question, we're just gonna just briefly bump up against two pretty big subjects that maybe are time for some other conversation, like the Fife Adventurers and the failure of that. And one thing that you said in that conversation was and if you want, maybe you can give people just kind of a brief summary of the Fife Adventurers, but that failed, and the Mackenzies succeeded where that failed, because one reason, maybe amongst others, was that the Mackenzies were Gaels. And kind of this also reminds me of Campbell's. They could wear two different hats. When they needed to speak Scots and interact with the government, they could do that. And when they needed to be Highlanders, they could be Highlanders, and they could speak Gaelic. And so they go over to Lewis, and they have this new territory, and it works. They don't have the same aggressive pushback from the Lewis men because they can speak the same language as them. But that was an element. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about this interaction of these two groups.
Yeah, that's true. They don't have as much. I suppose I should explain a wee bit about the Fife Adventurers first and the Mackenzie's role in it. So we mentioned Torquil Coranach. So this guy, he's got a Mackenzie mother, but his MacLeod father doesn't want anything to do with him. You know, bad parent. He disinherits him. Right, so the Mackenzies don't let this go. But by 1591, they move in on Assent, the Mackenzies. MacLeod of Assent lands. So MacLeod of Assent stay in place, but they're forced to accept a bond of superiority. Mackenzie has the charter to Assent. So that's two parts of the MacLeod lordship sewn up. Okay, so we've got Coigeoch, 1554. Now we've got Assent, but they want more. Why do they want more? Well, there's a really rich fishery in the MacLeod lordship. What are the MacLeods doing? They're all fighting like cats in a sack, especially after the death of the old chief. old Ruadhi lived until 1595, by which time he must have been nearly 90. Wow. Having fathered two sons, legitimate sons, in his 70s. What a man. But anyway, he is off the scene in 1595. But it turns out that Torquil Dhu, you know, the half-brother of the Mackenzie guy, is Torquil Dhu MacLeod's actually really good. The MacLeods all rally to his cause. He is actually carrying the fight to the Mackenzies. What do they do? So what the first thing they do is they've got to knock this guy out. They can't let him go. So they put up one of the local families in Lewis. They win a dirty side scheme. These are the Brehuin in North Lewis, or the hereditary judges. and they're supposed to be followers of Torquil Dhu. Anyway, they've been nobbled. And they pirate a Dutch, passing Dutch ship. The Dutch ship's full of wine. And they say, they go along to Torquil Dhu and they say, come on board, let's have a party. We've got this great ship full of Dutch wine. So Torquil Dhu goes on board. He's no sooner on board than he's bound, carried across to the Mackenzie lands in Westeros, and he is executed. And at this time, the Clan Chronicle says there's an earthquake in Westeros. Actually, there is an earthquake recorded in Scottish Chronicles too. But it's a nice story,
yeah,
isn't it?
I was thinking that's a nice story.
And it's kind of partially corroborated. What's the result of this? Well, Mackenzies think they're moving in on these lands, MacLeod lands. You know, they've got, and by 1598, Mackenzie has a charter in his hand for Stornoway Castle as keeper. Okay, way, so we're nearly there. But then by October that year, the king decides, or someone decides in Fife and down in the south, that actually they want all this themselves. Mackenzie, stupid islander, don't bother with him. So what happens is this group of merchants and nobles come together and they form a consortium, a joint stock company, and they think, well, let's establish a colony at Lewes. We'll take out the locals, we'll set up a colony, exploit the fishery, we'll build a civil lowland town. King James is delighted. King James wants to go into Ireland. He knows Elizabeth's old and going to die soon. So here we can have a Scottish plantation. So James is rubbing his hands. He thinks he's going to have revenue. James has got no, various economies nowadays have trouble. James has nothing in his, doesn't have two pennies to rub together. So he thinks he's going to have a cash flow from this rich fishery in Lewes now with proper management in place. Actually, the MacLeods of Lewes, led by Niall Oher MacLeod, a bastard son of the old chief, actually defeats them. This is a well-planned, well-financed plantation in Stornoway with soldiers, modern army, paid mercenary soldiers. They are defeated. They're sent packing, and they have to negotiate a truce with the MacLeods. King James is fit to be tied, so he can't see this to be failing. This looks really bad. You know, ambassadors are coming up from England, thinking he's the future king. What's the latest news from Lewes? Oh, actually, see your expedition, king. They've been kind of tamped by the MacLeods. Can't have that. So in 1605, he sends an expedition back. Things seem to be going well. So all the native local clans, such as the Mackenzies, are called in to sort of as auxiliaries for Crown forces. So they quite quickly roll over MacLeod's of Lewes again, right? So the MacLeods, when they see all this coming over the horizon, they know, well, we're not going to fight today. We're going to wait until they run out of food. They start to get run out of money, and then we're going to hit them. And that's what they do, guerrilla warfare. So both times the MacLeods absolutely wipe the floor with these colonists, lowland colonists, completely tank them. But at what price?
I'm going to interrupt my conversation here with Dr. McConaughey and give a shout out to my sponsor, USA Kilts. Hey, the season is coming up for Scottish festivals and Highland games, for getting out and about and being in the outdoors. And for all of those occasions, a kilt is an awesome thing to wear. So go over to usakilts.com and find yourself either a kilt or something else to express your connection to Scotland, whether it's just interest or whether you have some family ties. Go over there to usakilts.com and get yourself something. And if you have any questions about how to wear that, go over to the YouTube channel, USA Kilts and Celtic Traditions,
and find out exactly how to put it all together, or go find the history of those things. Maybe some interviews with awesome people from Scotland and get their perspectives. They've got it all on their channel. If you have a desire to express that connection to Scotland and to have an interaction with some quality customer service, then go over to usakilts.com and get yourself something. While you're over at YouTube trying to figure out how to wear the kilt properly, I also have a YouTube channel that I'm starting to flesh out there, and it is not in competition with, but complementary to USA Kilts and Celtic Traditions. I am taking a lot of my material from podcasts and adding visual aids to it. And I know a lot of you kind of feel lost because you don't have a map of Scotland memorized. And so some of them, I'm just taking podcast material and putting visual aids to them. Others I've created specifically for YouTube as though I were having a lesson and a slideshow with all of my graphics there. And so it's created from the start with YouTube in mind. Either way, go check it out at Scottish Clans on YouTube. And now back to my conversation with Dr. McConaugh.
First of all, they're depleted. Secondly, the king can't tolerate any MacLeod being left in Lewis. They made fools of the king. You don't make a fool of King James, because King James, you know, and especially by after 1607, he carries a big stick. He can reach into an English armory now and produce English naval ships, and they get sent against the MacLeods to support the Mackenzies, actually. So eventually it gets granted to the Mackenzies in 1610, and the Mackenzies have, in the word of a MacLeod chronicler, their long-wished and expected prey. So in 1610, Mackenzies conquer Lewis. So who's left on MacLeod lands? We've got Niall Oer, leader of the resistance. So Oer just means sallow face, presumably. So Niall Oer is his name, Niall Oer MacLeod. So he kind of holds up on a sea stack. We could be talking here some time. He holds up on a sea stack. You know, it's a robber's rock, you know, in the Atlantic, and he fortifies this, and he's for 3 years on this, and the Mackenzies, I mean, they've taken out the whole of Lewis except this holdout. So what do? Eventually, well, they finally round up all Neil's relatives, all his women, children, old men. They put them on a tidal rock, a flat rock, right, low tide. They tell him, either you get off the rock or they're going to get it. So Niall Oer eventually quits the rock because he doesn't want to see his kinsmen, kinswoman killed. So he scuttles away down to his former friend, Ruaidhe Mór MacLeod in Harris. So he says, Ruaidhe Mór MacLeod, take me to the king in London. I'll plead my case. So Ruaidhe Mór takes him to Glasgow. Now, we don't know whether Ruaidhe Mór gave up on him or whether he was just caught. But in any case, Niall Oer was taken across to Edinburgh. He was beheaded and his head stuck on a spike in Edinburgh, which was the standard standard treatment for what the crown considered traitors. And Niall Oer's charge sheet at his trial makes for a really impressive list of crimes and burnings and killings. But from Niall Oer's perspective, he was defending his homeland. And it reflects, I think, rather badly, possibly on Ruaidhe Mór MacLeod of Harris for having given him up. Now, and you know, Ruaidhe Mór might not have had any choice, but it doesn't help his image by writing to the king saying, I've given up my own blood. So yeah, Ruaidhe Mór's not on my Christmas card list.
Wow. That's quite a wild, that's a wild ending there. So the Mackenzie got crown backing in their efforts to take Lewis because of the success of the MacLeods of Lewis fighting back against the Fife adventurers who had the crown sanction to go up there in the first place. And so the Mackenzie effort was kind of like the crown's like, oh yeah, well, there's more than one ways to skin this cat. They send the Mackenzies in who succeed.
Yeah, there is that. But there's also the because we're not no longer Scotland, right? Because we're from 1603 we're Britain,
correct?
Of Britain, so Scotland and England. Scotland and England have inherited Ireland, and so by 1609, James has started on the plantation of Ulster. So that's a big job to be getting on with. I'm not sure the job has been finished yet, but there we are. So what if you're James, you want all the fires put out? There's been enough social dislocation. So yeah, rather than pursue plantation in Lewis, it's okay, give it to the Mackenzies. But the Mackenzies are then tasked with making it pay. Mackenzies have to pay through the nose for this.
Okay.
And then the next thing the Mackenzies do is, okay, how do you accomplish a hostile takeover? So if you're a clan, and the Mackenzies are a clan who've had multiple hostile takeovers, we mentioned the Mathesons earlier. Well, the Mathesons had been formerly followers of the Macdonalds. So what the Mackenzie sources tell us is that when they take over new lands from people such as the Macdonalds, they have all these tenants in there. Now, can they trust them? You know, are they going to, can they turn their backs to these guys? Because these guys have formerly been followers of the Macdonalds, for flip's sake. You can't trust them. So what do? So the Mackenzie phrase is, we make them try their hand in blood. What does this mean? It means you make them take up arms against their former masters and commit an act which irrevocably breaks their former ties of clanship.
Wow.
So in other words, they force them to fight against their former friends so that's how you break a clan. And that's how you try and take these new guys in. Now, one of the other things the Mackenzies do...
That's heavy.
It's heavy. Wow. It's heavy. And the Mackenzies in 1611, the Mackenzies of Gairloch, get carte blanche remission or pardon for any crimes capital. These guys have been going about killing, doing all sorts. I mean, you know, there's a lot going on that isn't documented. But these things don't happen easily.
Wow, that's pretty intense. Just a quick question. We talked about the MacLeods of Lewis, their control over, is it called the Minch?
Yes.
That sea area.
Yeah, it's called in Gaelic, it's called in Cuanski, which just means the sort of the tiring sea. It can be pretty tiring in winter. But in English, it's called the Minch because I think it comes from the French word La Manche, because of at some point, probably during the Jacobite period, there are French sailors going around, cartographers. I don't know why.
Okay.
Yeah, but that name catches on.
And so you have...
sea between Lewis and mainland of Scotland, yes.
Okay. And yeah, thank you for getting me clear on that. So the clouds, they don't just have Lewis, they have the adjoining mainland areas that touch that body of water. And then from there we get these different branches of the MacLeods. So now pivoting to the Mackenzies, you mentioned the Mackenzies of Gairloch and the Mackenzies are the Mackenzies of Kintail. I'm just wondering about the major branches of the Mackenzies. You know, we talk about the MacDonalds have all these branches that after the defeat of the Lordship of the Isles, after the crown takes that title, they kind of follow a more independent route. But there are these branches that become clans in their own right. And you mentioned the MacDonalds of Glengarry and the lands they held that ended up being taken by the Mackenzies and some following conflict there. I'm just wondering about these other branches of Mackenzies, Gairloch, Kintail. Are there any other notable branches of the Mackenzies that are on the radar?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, during most of this process, the Mackenzies are one unit, and one of the things about clans is they're expanding dynamic. You know, if they're successful, they're expanding dynamic and they're gobbling up other people's lands.
Right.
So the Campbells, for example, form all these cadet branches, but the main What they try and do is they keep the main branch, all powerful.
Okay.
And if there's going to be lands given to younger sons, they try and push them out to control more lands.
Yeah.
So if it's a successful clan, they're doing that, Mackenzie's, Campbell's. The MacDonalds do it early on, and then later on they lose out. That's partly the dynamic. Now, I mentioned the Mackenzies of Gairloch. So the Mackenzies are pretty united, except with the Mackenzies of Gairloch.
Oh, really?
At least two of the Mackenzies of Gairloch die in mysterious circumstances in the dungeons of Ellandonan Castle during the 16th century. The reason for this is the Kintail line had, Ellandonan Castle is sought after by a young John of Kintail and his, he would call his wicked uncle, that's the first of Gairloch in the early 1500s. John gets crown backing. Gairloch is sort of sullen, sitting in the west, not very happy about it. And the Kintail guys are worried about Gairloch. So I think that's why the two of them get bumped off in the 16th century. And as late as 1630, there's a story saying that Colin Mackenzie, first Lord Kintail and first Earl of Seaforth, has this table, this big wooden, fancy wooden table in Brahan Castle, the seat of the clan Mackenzie. And he says, there's a big sword slash, there's a big slash in the table, a sword slash where the Gairloch chief had tried to kill the chief, earlier chief of clan Mackenzie. But Colin, the reason we know the story is Colin, being a good Christian type of guy, caused this sort of slash to be cut out, so there'd be no remembrance of the quarrel.
Oh, wow.
In a sort of side deal letter, he says, in a letter to his brother, he says, if there's anything comes up with Gairloch, be very careful. Don't trust them.
Interesting.
We actually have that in black and white. So there are these tensions. But and pretty much, though, they seem to be united. But as the 17th century progresses, the branches of Clan Mackenzie, the main branches, grow further apart. And the tendency to sort of fragment increases as the main Seaforth Kintail line becomes, towards the end of the century, much, much less able to protect the clan because they're kind of inept. The Mackenzies rose to power through very competent chiefship, very good leadership. But by the later 1600s, they're making all the wrong choices.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're going away to France and things. I mean, really,
Yeah.
I mean, they back the Jacobite horse.
So, just kind of to come full circle, clear back to your story, your personal origins. I know that, in Dr. Cathcart's, her kinship and clientage, and she talks about clans as they expand and they acquired these new territories, like you just mentioned, it was really important the degree to which they had a kin base in that new territory made a big difference. And then there's, it could be real kinship or fictive kinship through either bonds of man rent or friendship or different mechanisms that they had at their disposal. When the Mackenzies obtained Lewis, did they begin planting it with Mackenzies? And then my first curiosity is that how your family got to be there, was coming over there, or is it a later group that came over? I don't know. Maybe we can finish with that, like bring it full circle back to your own story.
If you want. Unfortunately, I don't know. I think so. The only people who are well documented are people who've got money, and sadly,
that's not the group you
none
have.
None of that came to me. But I think probably that must have been where my paternal line came from. But if I go back through my family tree, I've got, MacLeods in there too and all these other branches. But in terms of what the Mackenzies did, one of the things they did was they took over, because, this is a great, it's a great deal of movement all through Europe in this 17th century. So where do Scots go? I mean, you've got the Spanish going to the New World. You've got the English, 1607 onwards, going to the New World too. They're going to Ulster. The Scots are actually piling into Eastern Europe in the late 16th century. You know, huge communities of Scots. Then Ulster comes on stream. But for the Mackenzies, it's you know, this is an opportunity. So they've got new opportunities to settle the place. So you get Mackenzie tenant farmers coming in to Lewis. So you've got Mackenzies, but also names like Grahams, McKeevers, and other names that you find, Baines, that you find, and Grahams, that you find in Mackenzie lands, and you find them transported into Lewis. So we've got an account from an English observer in 1630, which says this, that Lewis has been substantially repeopled from the adjacent mainland. So what you have in Lewis then is a sort of a dispossessed or well, I don't know if you quite call it dispossessed, because some of the native families do retain tenancies. None of the MacLeods do. So some of the Macaulays do in Uig in the west. Some of the MacGillivora clan or Brehew clan, in English they're now known as Morrison, they retain tax. None of the MacLeod, well, maybe one of the MacLeods, but you know, an island which had been occupied from MacLeods for centuries, none of the MacLeods have these major farms. They're all minor farmers, or you know, none of the major farms are owned by MacLeods. One of the other things they do is they make sure that there seems to be a pattern whereby if you hold land in Lewis, you also hold land in the mainland. So at least for the first couple of generations, people are holding, have a leg on each side of the Minch. So that's one of the ways in which they sort of interact with the ground of Lewis and the people of Lewis. The other thing they're doing is intermarriage. And after, you know, for the first couple of generations, it might be some awkward conversations. But after a couple of generations, of course, things calm down. They're all the same religion. They all speak Gaelic, which helps. It's, you know, I mean, just because they speak Gaelic, people can cut throats with just as great facility as not speaking Gaelic. And it doesn't really matter to an extent if it's a Scots-speaking Fifer or a Gaelic-speaking Eastern Rossmann that's taking your land. If they're taking your land, they're taking your land. So, but all in all, you know, you've got things like fosterage, you've got things like marriage, and gradually, yes, the Mackenzies do take a firm grip of Lewis.
Well, that's a wonderful narrative. It's a wonderful explanation of so many points. I think there's some things that you mentioned, and they're not just we were talking specifically about MacLeods and Mackenzies, but I think there's some concepts when we're talking about the Scottish clans that are that think we can learn, oh, this is clanship generally had these things going on. And so I think that was this so much value that you just shared with us. I am so grateful for you coming on. I could just if we were just hanging out and I was we were just on a walk, we just go for hours and hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, by all means, yeah.
If I make it over to, I am trying so hard to get over to Scotland for a visit. And if I manage to, maybe I'll wave at you.
Oh yeah, we must do. You must come and say hello if you come over. Yeah,
that'd be
and
wonderful.
And if you decide you've got other things you want to talk about, or this hasn't, you know, when you're pulling this together, you'd be editing it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if you edit it and you think there's some holes in it, and you know there's some questions you want to ask, get in touch and we can do it again.
Oh,
to
I'd
fill in
love
any
that.
gaps.
I would love a part two to this, and I think so will my audience.
Yeah.
So. Thank
Well,
you
by all
so
means,
much. Go ahead.
you're very welcome, Clinton. Really nice talking to you.
Well,
So good to speak to
likewise.
someone who's interested in Scottish history and Gaelic and things like that. Because that's what I do.
It is, and it's nice to have somebody who like that's your thing. You get to research this and write about it and teach people. And so, thank you for teaching us today. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, well,
And
thank you
us.
very much, Clint.
And thus concludes my conversation with Dr. Anus McConaugh of the University of Glasgow. That was a feast for me. That was so enjoyable. If it provided any value for you, I encourage you to go over to scottish-clans.com/team. There you can contribute to the cause. I've got a QR code for my Venmo that you can do like a one-time donation, or you can click a link and go over and become a subscriber at my Patreon. Now, if you're a bigger fan of free things to do to support the show, then there's a few things you can do as well there. You can share this podcast with somebody that you think would be interested in the subject. You can leave me a review, leave me some comments. If you have further questions or comments about this episode specifically, or follow on additional insights or things that we didn't cover or whatever else, you can go over and email me at thescottishclans@gmail.com. Also, as we head into the summer, if you have a venue that you need a speaker for, I've started to dip my toe into there. I've had some really good experiences so far, and I'm very open to that idea in the future. So reach out to me through the email as well. And stay tuned for another conversation with another Scottish professor, actually a colleague of Dr. McConaugh's. And yeah, keep your eyes out for that. Marshan Lave and Drasta.